My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check me out at the annual Black Effect Podcast Festival happening Saturday, April 27th in Atlanta. Live podcasts are on deck from some of your favorite shows, including this one, Black Tech Green Money, and also some of the best podcasts in the game, like Deeply Well with Devi Brown and Carefully Reckless. Atlanta is one of my favorite cities in the world. I lived there for 2 years, actually. And my worldview, seeing us successful in every industry and not having any limits on our potential, largely was shaped by Atlanta. So to be there with you, doing this podcast, talking about how we build or leverage technology to build wealth, come on, man, it doesn't get better. I want to see you there. Get your tickets today at blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. I'm Will Lucas, and this is Black Tech Green Money. Deshante Parks is founder and CEO at 1000 More, an app that makes it easier for people from underrepresented communities, like the one she's from, to engage in politics, a topic that is super important to everyone's well-being and growth, but often difficult to participate in. Her app provides digestible, nonpartisan summaries of legislation coming up for a vote, written in a way that doesn't require a law degree to understand. You can also find the popular arguments for and against bills, and it also helps you connect with elected officials and participate in crowdfunding campaigns for organizations you care about. Her mission of civic empowerment started at Louisiana State University, and she worked on the Senate campaign for now Vice President Kamala Harris, and she has a Master of Public Policy degree from Harvard Kennedy School. In preparing to talk with her, my mind immediately went to lobbying and how the voice of the people can be suppressed by big money. So I asked Deshante to break down how this happens time and time and again, both negatively and positively, for the issues that might matter most to you.
So I think I think we're actually kind of not even ever taught about lobbyists and lobbying. I think what happens is we hear it in the context of the big lobby has all this influence. And so we think we're separate from it. We think they're the enemy because they have all this influence and they have a lot of money, and maybe we feel like we don't have any, right? The term lobbying comes from the men who used to stand in the lobby of the hotels where the elected officials would stay when they came to DC to vote, because they would live in their districts most of the time all over the country, and then they would come into DC to vote as a legislative body, and there would be men who literally hung out in the lobby of these hotels and would buy them drinks and would talk to them and would therefore have an influence on whatever they were voting on. That was a lobbyist. So the way that they still have influence, really, I tell people all the time, the money is part of it, but what's even more important is lobbyists' full-time jobs are to talk to your elected officials. So while you're working 9 to 5 and then you get home from work and you gotta cook for the kids and you gotta exercise, and you're tired, and then you got to even make time to watch the news, then you got to digest the news, form an opinion, then call. They're not even at the office to answer the phone at that point. Whereas lobbyists, this is all they do. This is their job. And by the way, it's not a bad job, right? I have friends that are lobbyists. There are people who lobby for children's rights. You know, there are people who lobby for education and lobby for healthcare. You can lobby for all kinds of things. And so lobbyists are not bad people. What is potentially bad is this system that we've created in which it does create an imbalance in power when organizations with a lot of money can afford to have people full-time staying engaged with your elected officials when you don't have time to talk to them at all. So what happens is your elected official hasn't heard from you since the last time you voted, and they hear from lobbyists every single day. So that's just who has their attention. So that's what lobbying is. That's our relationship to lobbying as people. I created an app that completely dismantles that. So with 1,000 More, you see every bill coming up for a vote. So actually coming up for a vote. There's a lot of bills that get caught up in committee. And those are honestly kind of a waste of our time because they're never going to get an actual vote. I put in every bill that's coming up for a vote. I write everything at a third grade level because 54% of Americans read below a sixth grade level. And also, it shouldn't take you an hour to digest what a bill is. I spend an hour figuring out what the bill is. I write the summary at a third grade level so you can spend a couple of minutes, know what the bill is. You can see the arguments for and against. We're nonpartisan. And then you can take action on it, including calling, email, and tweeting. There's a little script in case you're nervous about what to say. So the script is different if you're for or against. And then you also can donate to an organization that's advocating for the bill. Because when we crowdfund our dollars, we actually outspend the lobby here in America. So the lobby spends about $3.5 billion a year. Americans spend $5 billion a year crowdfunding philanthropy. So we're talking about things like GoFundMe. So we quite literally are bigger than the big lobby with our voices and with our dollars. But before 1,000 More, there was no mechanism for us to crowdfund our dollars on policy, on every single piece of legislation. So people have already figured out that small dollar donations make a huge difference in politics. When I talk about small dollar donations, we're talking about donations that are $200 or less. Those sorts of donations power campaigns. Campaigns can't win without millions in small dollar donations. And we already know that. But before 1,000 More, there was no mechanism to make a small dollar donation between election seasons. So you shouldn't only be participating during an election cycle. You should be participating between election cycles because that's how we hold our elected officials accountable. That's how we stay informed so that, number one, we can tell them what we want them to do. And number two, when they don't do it, we can hold them accountable when it's time to vote for them again.
So you said something that I found really interesting, and perhaps it's, you know, provides you an opportunity to build this technology, and that it takes hours and hours to digest what these legislative, you know, documents say. And the conspiracy theorist in me says that's probably intentional. I don't know if it's intentional, but yeah. I wonder what you think. Yeah. Like, is it intentional that we can't understand this language?
Yeah, I mean, look, I didn't go to law school for a reason. People who go to law school, I don't get it. I ended up getting my master's in public policy because I was like, y'all are learning how to work within a system that's broken. I don't want to learn how to work within the system. I want to learn how to change the system on a systemic level. And so I went and got my master's in public policy. But that said, yeah, I do think it's intentional. I think we have an education system in this country that rewards people that have money and punishes people who don't. So you are assigned a public school based on your zip code, and your zip code is assigned a tax bracket based on the cost of housing in that zip code. And based on that tax bracket, your school is allocated resources. So schools in the neighborhoods that have expensive houses get more resources than schools that have inexpensive housing. And so, you know, if we have an entire part of our society who's already not getting the funding that they need, maybe in their personal lives, so, you know, their parents don't make a lot of money, people don't make a lot of money, then in school, they're not getting the kind of education that would help them move in status at all, help them help themselves, if you will. And then the people who are already in power get to stay in power. So the people who have money, they get a good education, they learn how to make more money. And those people tend to be people who have more access to politics. Even, you know, when I was out on the campaign trail, and so my family's from Shreveport, Louisiana, I was raised in Fort Worth, Texas. And people would tell me all the time, like, you know, it doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what I'm thinking. You think rich people think that? Rich people don't think that. They know it matters what they say and what they think. Part of this is a mindset too. So yes, I think the way our education system is set up is the foundation for disenfranchisement. I think it is directly tied to civic engagement. And I think that the entire system was built in a way that protected the interests of, at the time, slave owners. That's when our country was founded, and it was founded with those ideals. The way that laws were structured protected the people who already had power, because the people in power were making the laws. And of course, over time, thank God, there have been revolutions and movements, but at its core, the way the system works still does reward people who already have money, who already have power, and it takes disruptive movements or tools, in this case with 1,000 more technologies, to really flip things on its head. So, you know, I hear people all the time say, you know, we can't keep working within the same systems. Okay, fine, here's the deal. We're not gonna see the lobby go anywhere in our lifetime. You know, and I say all the time, if I could go back in time and talk to the Native Americans, would I have been like, you should really start a yoga practice because there's some serious shit about to go down. You know, no, I'd be like, we need to get y'all some guns. Where are the guns? Where are the bombs? Yeah. You know, so we can't bring water balloons to a gunfight, and I build 1,000 more so we could have the same tools and flip this system on its head. That's the best I think we can do right now.
Yeah, so I wonder if there are more Deshantes out there. So I was doing some research before this, and I was reading this article from the National Institute of Health, and it was talking about how the more we have issues in the country, the more people feel disenfranchised, inequality exists, mm-hmm. people feel victimized, et cetera, the more they engage civically. And we're, I guess, post-COVID. I think they say we're post-COVID. I mean, we are post-COVID, but we're out of the pandemic era. Do people still feel that level of engagement as we felt after George Floyd, immediately after George Floyd in the pandemic?
So what's interesting is it always is just shifting, is the way I see it. So those people who are like, politics doesn't impact my life. Okay, well, it's impacting somebody's life right now, I guarantee you. In fact, this dude told me a couple months ago, this dude was like, I don't vote. I just kind of do what's in front of me. And I was like, do you have running water at your house? Do you have trash pickup? Do you have women in your life? Do you ever get sick? Like, I don't know what that means. If you think politics doesn't affect you, you might be very rich. Or you might be willfully ignorant. You want to believe it doesn't affect you because it is so psychologically difficult for you to confront that there are people that have a lot of power over your life. And that is really scary. And I know it's hard. I think a lot about civic engagement is tied to our willingness to confront some very difficult things about the way the world works that we live in. But no, I think I agree. I have not seen the stat that you're talking about. I agree that when people are personally impacted by a policy, there is outrage, and it tends to happen in communities. And what's important is, you know, as people try to build coalitions, they try to build coalitions across communities because we're bigger together. But also what I want to talk about is how even when we think we're seeing civic engagement, like what is civic engagement? Yeah, if you post something on Twitter, sure, it's civic engagement. Even if you just watch the news, that is in theory civic engagement because you're engaging with what's going on. You're engaging with the news in your own home. But when we talk about civic engagement that translates into action and specifically legislative action, what sorts of things move the needle on that? And it's not talking on social media. I built this tool so that it integrates into social media. We built a web app and not a mobile app because I didn't think people would want to download a new app. I was trying to create something that could integrate into Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. So wherever people were, we met them where they were, and you don't even have to leave with the social media platform you're on. You and your friends are talking about a bill. You drop a link to 1,000 more, to the bill and 1,000 more. They click, they read a bit about it. They read the arguments for and against. They choose if they're for or against. They can call, email, tweet, or donate. They go right back to scrolling very quick. So that translates into actually letting your elected official know. And believe it or not, that matters. People think that it doesn't matter if you call your elected official, and it absolutely matters. These people want to be reelected, and they know that it's only your votes that can do that. Now, the money that they get from some of these big donors, they will use it in like TV ads or digital ads on social media to win your vote. But if you are already knowledgeable about their track record, if you've already been paying attention, it's gonna be very difficult to get your vote, and they know that. So when you're talking online, they do see that. When you're calling their office, they see that. It doesn't take long, and they're just tallying, you know, how many calls did we get today about that infrastructure bill, or about that education bill, about that healthcare bill? How many calls did we get today? And then they're like, okay, people really care about this. It moves to the top of the agenda. Because when you're not saying anything, then they don't even know how much the people in their district care about this. And again, those lobbyists are talking to them every day.
Yeah. So I'm gonna throw two things at you, and I hate to do that because you should just give one question, but you gave me so much there. And so one, I've heard less people say that it doesn't matter to them, and more people say that their one vote won't make a difference. So I want you to speak mm-hmm. to that. And then on top of that is, I've heard this phrase of all politics is local. And so mm-hmm. if the important things that actually may make a bigger difference to me are my local elections versus the federal ones, mm-hmm. even though the federal ones do have impact. But the ones, to your point, you know, is your street are the potholes, you know, covered up? You know, are the women in my life able to go get healthcare, et cetera? Can you talk about how it's important, how that one vote does make a difference, and the other things you should do beyond just mm-hmm. that one vote? And how mm-hmm. local politics matters to your everyday life.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last 1.5 years. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. So first of all, people aren't wrong. So bring your friend, you know, bring your whole family, bring your friends, bring whoever, because I mean, you're not wrong. One vote is one thing. But when we talk about anything in life, right, like especially when we're talking about public policy, when we're talking about a democracy, how do you think we get to those millions of votes? Those are all people. Those are all individual people. Those thousands of votes, there have been elections that were decided on one vote. There was one in Louisiana recently. So this stuff is real. Like that person who thought my vote doesn't matter, that would have tied it. And if they had brought their friend, it would have been 2 votes. And then maybe the other person would have won. This stuff is consequential. Also, you're not wrong. Bring more than one person. That's why people are out here building coalitions. So I think that the intuition there is right in that you want to try to advocate for your position so that you have more people on your side. And honestly, most of us are hanging out with people and spending time with people who agree with us anyway. And so you just need to get them to the poll or to the phone or whatever it is. So there's that.
So to your point of hanging out people who are like you. So if you're one vote, if you're one person who thinks your vote doesn't matter, you probably got 10 friends who think that same thing. So that's actually 10 votes and not one.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Which is amounting to millions of votes. And then, you know, also, so in this election, you know, we didn't even have a Democratic primary. People didn't even get a choice for who the Democratic presidential candidate was going to be. People are very upset about that. So people think, you know, I don't like either of the candidates. I don't want to vote at all. And I'm saying you need to vote at least independent. Vote for someone else because they need to know that you matter. They need to know that you're paying attention because then next time they will be actually vying for your vote. If you just don't show up at all, they think that person's not even going to get off the couch. I don't have to listen to them at all. Yeah. And you can see it is public record who is a voter. It doesn't tell you who they voted for, but you can see every time a person has voted. So if you are calling your elected official's office, you are in theory more likely to be listened to if they know you're a voter, if they know that you vote every single time. So go out and vote for somebody, vote for something, because it really just signals to them that you have some kind of value in what they want, which is to get reelected. And also, by the way, that's not the only thing. There's all types of civic engagement, you know, I mentioned earlier. So also not publicly shaming them on social media. Yeah. That's a way to get their attention. All like any kind of civil disobedience. There's a reason why people shut down interstates because money moves on interstates. If people can't get to work, if shipments can't get where they're trying to go, that disrupts the economy. There's power in that too. So there's all sorts of power in civic engagement. And you know, we can signal to elected officials in all kinds of ways. Voting is one of them. Calling is one, emailing, social media, stuff like that. And then your other question.
Speaks about local, speaks a lot like local That's right. involvement.
Yeah. Okay. So people talk about that because you are, I mean, it's fractions, right? So like out of 100 people, if you're 1 in 100, then you have a lot more impact there than if you're 1 in 1,000,000. You just have more impact. There's more of a chance that, you know, your vote could be the change, could be sort of the tipping point. And yes, local politics is really important. And 1,000 More, of course, wants to do local politics eventually. Right now, we only do federal. We've only been doing this for a short amount of time. But, you know, I would say that these things all work together. So America has a very decentralized democracy, which means that it's not one central government that makes all the decisions. It's decentralized. We have the federal government, then we have our state governments, then we have our local governments. And they all work together in different ways. So if y'all will remember, like when California made marijuana legal, but then the federal government said marijuana was not legal, remember that? And that caused a lot of confusion. And they were like, well, you could still be arrested if you're driving with it, whatever, you know, it like depended on the circumstances of an arrest. Well, that's sort of how our government works together. The government also, the federal government can protect you from unjust laws locally. So a historical example of this is, you know, the federal government, well, the Supreme Court ruled that schools had to be integrated and states still didn't do it. You know, again, my family's from Louisiana. My dad was in the first integrated class of his high school. My dad's not that old. He's like 50 something. So the federal government had to step in because state governments were violating people's rights. And we see sort of the same thing, the same concept when we talk about like access to abortion. You know, when that thing happened in Alabama where the court there ruled against the IVF clinic and this was just a few weeks ago, and everyone was like, IVF is going to be legal. The federal government tried to put in place protections for IVF so that it would then say that the your local government could not take that right from you. So they all work together because there are going to be times that you agree more with your local government. There are going to be times when you agree with more with your federal government. And, you know, people talk about states' rights versus federal rights. There's a lot of southern states that are like, we want the federal government to stay out of it. You know, we want states to be able to make these decisions. And the decisions tend to be decisions that are infringing on individual rights. Yes, politics is local. The more local something is, I love working in municipal government. It's my favorite place to work because you can change something so quickly. You can get that pothole filled. You can, you know, if there's a water issue, you know, what happened in Flint, for example, you can very quickly put policies in place to protect people. if you're working in an efficient municipal government. So I love municipal government. It's just, I want people to understand how all these things work together. It's important to vote on every level.
Certainly. So from a tech CEO perspective, you know, when people think about, and I don't know what your goals are personally in building a technology, but I'm imagining there's, you know, a part of it is, you know, benevolent, and part of it is also there's an opportunity there. I'm imagining. You can correct me if I'm wrong. And so community work is not something necessarily people think about when they are trying to find a lot of wealth. But I wonder, I believe first that you can do well while doing well. So can you speak to how you find wealth, you know, a unicorn opportunity with your 1,000 more company working in community? I want you to speak to that, the motivations here.
Well, first of all, I never wanted to build a tech startup at all. I grew up very poor. We did not, even when everyone else got the internet, we didn't get the internet right away. So I was very much behind the curve. Like I missed AOI, AOM, whatever that was called, that in semester. I missed all that. Like MySpace, like I missed it. Like I used to have to, when I was at my friend's house, I was like, oh, y'all got the internet. Let me, how do you do this? Like I never considered myself tech savvy at all. What happened was I was working in politics. What I always did want to do was civic engagement. What I really wanted to do was have a political talk show that was funny and entertaining for Black people. I wanted it to come on right after 106 in Park because I knew no one was going to tune into my show on purpose. I thought maybe they would, you know, still be finishing their snack as 106 in Park was ending and maybe they would just hang around. Maybe I would be funny enough that maybe people would stick around and get the news of the day. That's what I wanted to do. So I got a degree in political communications from LSU, which was the journalism school. I produced the first public affairs show on Tiger TV. And then I ended up needing a job and my life took a different direction. I graduated, I got a job offer, I took it. I was working in politics and I was very obsessed about how do we get people to pay attention? How do we get people to absorb information? How do we get people to take action? And especially people like the people where I'm from. So I knew that that had something to do with like the intersection of pop culture, you know? Like if some celebrity was talking about 1,000 more, it would have a lot more weight than me talking about 1,000 more, a girl who just spent a lot of time working in politics. And that's what I was doing. I was working in politics all over the country. I worked on Kamala Harris's U.S. Senate campaign in California. I worked on Jason Kander's U.S. Senate campaign in Missouri, Mary Landrieu's U.S. Senate campaign in Louisiana. I was all over the country working in politics and up and down the ballot as well. There were lots of other races, but I would always hear people say, why do we only hear from these people when it's time to vote? And I'd be like, no, you don't have to. And I would say, like, just call me, just text me. And I just was very obsessed about this. And one night, and this was at a time in my life when I was just feeling very hopeless about the state of politics. I was like, I've dedicated my whole life to this. I don't think I'm making any difference. I'm not even doing the job I originally wanted to do. I don't know that I'm helping people. I don't even know that these people that I've worked for are really upholding the values that I wanted them to or hoped that they would. I was feeling very frustrated and very hopeless about what I was doing. And one night I had a dream and I saw 1,000 more in the dream. So in the dream, I was taking a nap. There was like a ruckus outside. I walked outside and was like, why are y'all being so loud? I'm trying to take a nap. And this man was like, we're about to stop this bill. And I was like, yeah, right. How are you going to do that? Because I'm thinking I dedicated my whole career to this and I don't even know how to tell you to do that. So how you think you're going to do it? And he was like, we use this app. And I was like, what app? Show me. And he showed me the whole thing. And I woke up in the middle of the night and promised God I would build it. And I've been building it ever since. So it wasn't about money. But that said, this is a billion-dollar idea, right? This is the GoFundMe of politics. What the Robinhood app did to Wall Street is what we're doing to politics. This is absolutely a billion-dollar business. And I am so grateful and can't wait for that moment. But yeah, I think you can do good while doing good. And I think really my only advice about that is I think there was so long that I was like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I out on the campaign trail? I'm not on TV. I'm not doing what I want to do at all. I didn't know why I was doing what I was doing. And it made me really sad. And then I think one day God just showed me a very clear vision of what I would be doing. And stuff started making sense. Like a thousand more would not be what it was, what it is, if I hadn't spent all that time on the campaign trail talking to tens of thousands of voters, hundreds of donors, you know, thousands of politicians and community leaders and things like that. It took all those perspectives and it took all of that experience for me to build what I did.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I love that. I was reading an article about how there's so many more Black people, young Black people specifically, investing in the stock market. And while the title, I'm like, yes, we should be doing that. Then I read the article and they were like, but the problem is where we get our education about what stocks to invest in comes from mostly social media. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably not great because we invest in stuff that we don't have education about. And I wonder what your thoughts are on, are we doing that same thing for the things that we vote for?
I think that is such an important question. So I think we do. I think all people get a lot of information from social media. I think that is a symptom of people not trusting mainstream media as they haven't for a very long time and for good reason. People don't trust the media. Oftentimes people don't trust their governments. So that's all fair. And I think what's important is people finding sources who they can trust. And I built 1,000 More the way that I did because education is the foundation of it. Journalism is the foundation of it. Again, my degree is in journalism. So I built it so that it's all these summaries, all these bill summaries are read by me. I make sure that I have a team of people, of course, but I make sure that they are fair, a fair representation of what's in the bill. I make sure that they're written in a way that does not require a law degree to understand. And I made sure that it was easily shareable because I did want this to first and foremost be a source of information. That in itself breaks barriers. It gives people a trusted source of information so that they can even just verify what they're seeing on social media. If you hear it first from a friend, that's fine, but you need a place to verify the information. Yeah, I think people get a lot of their news from social media. I don't think it's always a bad thing, but I think that there needs to be a real education on media literacy. You know, how do you know if something is factual? You should, if you hear from a friend, that's fine, but you should check it. You should check the source. A lot of times people don't even ask the source. I always will say, where did you get this information from?
I know. I'm a witness. You do ask that. I love it. I want to talk about how, like, when you get an idea like this, you said it came to you in a dream, which I love that. Like, and you said you were not dreaming to be a tech entrepreneur growing up. So, like, what is the step? Like, how do you, I had this dream, I had this idea, now I'm going to go build it. Like, how you do that?
Yeah. So, again, I think God had put everything already in place and I didn't even know it. So I went to LSU. I'm an AKA who went to LSU. So my profite, who's just a couple lines before me, is Savitra Wilson, who built Resilia.
Yeah.
And so she's like my friend. That's my sister. Yeah. Like, you know, so I asked her, she was the first person I was like, I had this crazy dream. And no, I had already bought the domain at this point, but I was like, what do you think about this? And she was like, I think it's brilliant. And the advice that she gave me is tell anyone who will listen. Most people want to hold their ideas close to the vest because they think that someone's going to steal their idea. She was like, most people can't even execute their own visions, much less yours. So tell anyone who listens. I had already been accepted to Harvard at the time. So I started my master's in public policy at Harvard, and I was just telling anyone who would listen. Now, again, I know that's a huge opportunity that most people don't have. Harvard is just throwing, if you get into Harvard, they're throwing money everywhere. So yeah, there was like, you know, couple thousand dollars here and there, a pitch competition. There was a class I took at the business school at HBS where they give you $2,000 to execute a business plan. And I took the class twice. Like, you know, I ended up meeting. So the first step was I ended up meeting a dude in my class who a lot of people are in transition at Harvard going from one career to another. His first career had been in projects like product management. So he was like, do you have a product roadmap? I was like, I don't even know what that is. And he was like, look, you should make a prototype. I'm like, what's a prototype? He's like, hire a graphic designer to draw a picture of what's in your head. Wow, that makes so much sense. I literally asked my girls back in Louisiana, do we know any graphic designers? Hired Morgan Hilliard, who is a Black woman graphic designer, who happened to, I didn't even know, I hired her because I thought she was a good graphic designer. Her husband owned a tech startup.
Wow.
So she was like, I know how to make a clickable prototype. I said, oh, we next level with it. I gave her the money Harvard had given me because at the time I think I'd gotten like maybe $1,200 or something. So she made a clickable prototype for me. And then I gave that to a software developer. The software developer built it. I mean, we built it together, obviously. We even had to create our own language because I didn't speak any of his coding language. He didn't know anything about politics. So we started talking about it like we were building a house. Like we'd be like, okay, we're in the living room. There's three different doors. This is like the user experience. And yeah, we just truly, I think just being solutions oriented got me through this. I knew there was always an answer. So I just would talk to anyone who would listen. I asked a lot of questions, and I did what people told me to do. And I, you know, got some of the money. I went for the money and was able to pay people who could help me build this thing.
So in my view, you've got like two challenges. One is to get people to use it. Two is you got to convince people that getting engaged is worth their time. And so can you give your pitch for why you should really be engaged? This is your platform.
Life or death. It's literally life or death. I mean, it might not be life or death for you at the moment, but it could be. I had an Uber driver who told me he wasn't politically involved. And I was like, okay, fine. And we start talking. Turns out his daughter's on insulin. I'm like, did you know there's a bill right now moving on insulin? And he's like, no, I didn't even know that. He did not even know that his daughter's life depended on him being politically aware. And you know, there's a lot of people like him, a million people like him. And when those people come together and make it clear that this is a priority for the community, that these elected officials represent, then things get done. And in so many ways, right? Like the war on drugs, people being imprisoned wrongly, these are people's lives. And some people are impacted more than others, but I'm sure you can, when you really think about it, think of a way that politics or policy has impacted you or your family or your community. So what I would say is don't be afraid of that. Don't run from that. Confront why it's scary and know that there are people who you can trust and that I've created a way for you to engage from the comfort of your own home. So you can, in a very safe environment, just start tinkering with this. Start reading about, you know, a couple bills. Try to call. You're alone in your home. If you call and hang up one time, no one's going to know. You know, just call again. Read the script verbatim. If they ask a follow-up question, I don't have anything to say. Just try. Just try. And the first time you do it, it's going to be scary. And the 10th time you do it, it's not. And that's like anything in life. You are a person who matters in this democracy. Even if, by the way, even if you're not a citizen, if you live in this community, if you live in this country, you are important to this democracy. And you just need to believe that. The thing is I know it, your elected officials know it, the media knows it, everyone knows it, and they are banking on you to believe. People who are currently in power are banking on you believing that you have no power. That's the easiest way for them to take your power, is to convince you that you have no power. So if you think you have no power, ask yourself, who told you that? Why do you think that? And then know that it's not true and take your power back. Get on 1,000 more.
Black Tech Green Money is a production of Blavity Afrotech on the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia. It's produced by Morgan DeBon and me, Will Lucas, with additional production support by Sarah Ergen and Love Beach. Special thank you to Micah Davis and Kate McDonald. Learn more about my guests and other tech disruptors and innovators at Afrotech.com. Enjoying Black Tech Green Money? Share this with somebody. Go get your money. Peace and love. Check me out at the annual Black Effect Podcast Festival, happening Saturday, April 27th in Atlanta. Live podcasts are on deck from some of your favorite shows, including this one, Black Tech Green Money, and also some of the best podcasts in the game, like Deeply Well with Devi Brown and Carefully Reckless. Atlanta is one of my favorite cities in the world. I lived there for 2 years, actually. And my worldview, seeing us successful in every industry and not having any limits on our potential, largely was shaped by Atlanta. So to be there with you, doing this podcast, talking about how we build or leverage technology to build wealth, come on, man, it doesn't get better. I want to see you there. Get your tickets today at blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Fedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.